Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. This week, we've got a very special episode because not only is Otis back with us, but we've been digging deep into the Gadget Show archives. You're going to love this.
And we found a feature from 15 years ago where Otis gave us his top five predictions for the future of tech. So we're going to dive in to see what he got right and what he didn't get right.
But before we get into that, a very quick thank you to our friends at CX.
Because if you love tech, you'll know the feeling. Every time something new comes out, you'll start thinking, do I really need this?
And then you look over at a pile of gadgets you already own. Old phones, consoles, tablets, little gaming consoles, all just sitting there, not doing very much.
Ah, yes, but that's where CEX comes in. Instead of letting that tech gather dust, you can trade it in for cash or credit towards something new.
I love it because they take loads of different gear, consoles, laptops, games, smartwatches, you name it.
And the nice thing is, everything CEX sells has been tested, checked and refurbished, so you know exactly what you're getting.
Yes, it all comes with a five-year warranty, which is not something you get from most places selling refurbished tech, new tech for that matter.
So if you're thinking about upgrading or you're just curious what your old gadgets are worth...
Well, I wasn't, but now you've said that, Suze. Head to webuy.com or pop into your local CEX or sex store and take a look. Actually, CEX, just in case there's any confusion.
Oh, I was going to go. Otis, it is so lovely to see your shiny face. firstly, how are you? Yes, you're looking very healthy, as always. How you doing? What tech has caught your fancy over the last few weeks and months since we last saw you?
Well, firstly, I'm a bit concerned at you saying I'm shiny, so I need to ease back on the old moisturising skincare.
Anti-shine.
Now I know you guys have been talking a lot about foldables lately, especially
me. It's me mainly.
Apple's
rumored
one. I don't know if I'd like a foldable iPhone.
Oh
no.
Come on! Buy
I'm sorry.
In.
I'm sorry. I've had to say it. I've put it out there, but I do have some rumors for you, which may titillate you further. One well-known tipster says that the Samsung-made folding displays for the iPhone Fold are about to go into mass production. Yes, which usually means that the hardware is locked in and that Apple is gearing up for launch. And the price being talked about, are you ready, Susie? I hope you've been putting your pennies away.
No.
Two grand, all right.
Two bags, love. Two
Stop
bags.
It.
Yeah.
2,000 quid.
Yeah, I thought so.
We're
really talking premium
you, aren't they?
Quality. But trade in your old one, you'd be all right.
I think it's interesting, Suze, because, you know, you've been so right on this so far. And when you think about it, you know, like the watch, you know, when you try and look to buy one of the watches, you think, oh, they're a couple of hundred quid. They're quite reasonable. And then you go, oh, hang on a minute, though. You can get that scratch-free glass. And that'll, I mean, I'm just vibing, but like, that's an extra 100 quid. And I quite like cellular. And before you know it, you're at 700 quid and you're looking at the Ultra. And you're thinking, actually, do you know what? Titanium and all those other features that I'm probably never going to use. I might as well go for that now. And I feel that as you move up the range of phones, you'll get to this one that you so brilliantly predicted and that Otis is now telling us is in production. And you'll probably say, do you know what? 2K, what's another grand?
But I do think you do, you know, you reach a stage where you're like, well, do you know, I'd rather spend my money on just something that I could create a memory, or I don't want to be too wistful about this, but I think I buy now what I need than what I want tech wise.
Yes.
So I really want a foldable phone that's really good. I want one. I don't need one, of course. I don't need one, but I would love one. But I wouldn't pay 2 grand for it. Sorry.
So yeah, £2,000. It's a lot of money, but I do feel a lot of people will convince themselves that it's the right price to pay. We'll see.
I still think it's a lot of eye-watering amount of money, isn't it?
And that's not all from Apple, guys. I've got a little bit more. They also surprised everyone this week by suddenly announcing the AirPods Max 2, so the second generation of its premium over-ear headphones, which I'm not a fan of. To be completely honest, I know there's a lot of goodness inside, but stylistically, I think they look awful. I've said my bit. Now, the timing is a bit unexpected because this comes just days after the Neo and iPad launches. The original AirPods Max came out back in 2020 and haven't really changed much since, apart from the USB-C update last year. So this is the first proper refresh. The big upgrade is new chip inside, which Apple says will give you greater noise cancelling capabilities, improved sound processing, and newer AirPod features like adaptive audio, conversational awareness, and voice isolation for clearer calls. There is also a new live translation feature, which can translate conversations in real time when you're using them with your iPhone. So they will go on sale 25th of March, starting at just under £500 at £499. So still very much at the premium end. But it finally brings the AirPods Max in line with the rest of Apple's audio range.
I love the technology of the translation. You know, I got really excited about buying these in Japan at the end of last year. But haven't you? I actually haven't used it.
I know, exactly. It's not going to work,
is it?
That's
what I was just talking about.
Do you know what I mean?
You get sold the dream and you get excited about it. And it's brilliant. Like, I love the tech about it. I love it. But have I used it? Does anybody go around the world more than me? No.
And if you're not using it, for the love of God, who is? They may as well have called it the AirPods Perry, right?
Yeah.
Because you're so into that ecosystem, you love the design, you love the sound, they fit your ears, they work, you've got a history of the product, and you're the most well-traveled person I know. There are very few people on earth. I mean, I don't know anyone. I don't think I'll ever meet anyone who goes to more foreign countries than you do, with multiple languages all over Europe, to Japan and God knows where else, right? The Middle East, you name it, and you're not using the feature. Well,
yeah,
it's pointless.
Not using your Peripods properly.
Yeah, the Peripods is a pointless product, and that wasn't meant to be such a good example of alliteration.
Please forgive me.
I'm going to carry on the P's with PlayStation. All right. Okay.
Go on.
So you know that last week I talked about Lego and their fabulous new smart brick.
Smart Play. Yep. Yep.
Anyway, they are back in the news with a potential follow-on from their epic Game Boy endeavor very recently, which we also covered on this here podcast.
Yes, we did. Yeah,
yes, because they could well be releasing, you're going to love this, Otis, a buildable original PlayStation. So the OG PlayStation in Lego form. All those nostalgia-heavy sets that are, you know, basically designed to empty the wallets of, well, kind of you and me, and now a pretty reliable Lego leaker says the next one could be the PS1, landing later this year. It's going to be about 1,900 pieces and around £150 and aimed at, you notice, which usually means lots of tiny bits, which I probably won't be able to see with me reading glasses, and the risk of losing your sanity halfway through a very expensive build. And I'm not going to say that £150 for something that cool is actually that expensive. I think it's quite reasonable.
It does
for Lego,
expensive.
Because Lego can be expensive. There's also rumour, Otis, that it could include Lego's take on the DualShock controller. And who knows, like that Kickstarter project Brick Boy, which we also brought you a few weeks ago, which turns the original Lego Game Boy into an actual working handheld.
Genius.
Yeah,
I'm now wondering how long it'll take the Lego community to turn this particular old school retro gaming device into a fully working PlayStation. Because, you know, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be the Lego community. Anyway, marvellous. That caught my eye this week. What about you, Susie?
I just think that's so fantastic. I absolutely can't wait. And also, can you imagine being a Lego leaker? It's like something that we all aspire to.
Right, time for something very exciting. The brand new Gadget Show competition is live, and this one's worth a huge £5,000 giveaway to spend at CEX.
And the nice thing about doing this through Patreon is that it's just for our core listeners, which means the number of entries stays sensible, and that gives you a much better shot of the prize.
So to enter, just go to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and sign up to one of our paid tiers. They start at about the price of a cup of coffee. And there are three levels, light, mid and max.
Light gives you one entry, mid gives you three and max gives you five. So if you fancy boosting your chances, then that's the one to get.
Once you've signed up, send us a direct message on Patreon with the answer to the following question. In what year did The Gadget Show first air on TV? Was it A, 2002, B, 2004, C, 2006, or D, 2007? And remember, you're not just entering The Gadget Show competition.
You'll also get ad-free episodes, early access, bonus content.
And get this, if you're on the max tier, that's the top one, you unlock the full Gadget Show archive. That's over 20 years of the show, at nearly 500 episodes. Isn't that an amazing thing, Susie? So it's a serious amount of tech history, not just your competition, that lot as well.
So extra content, better odds, and the chance to win a £5,000 tech shopping spree.
Yes, just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to enter.
And you'll find the full terms and conditions linked in the episode.
So, Otis, as we've got you here, we thought we'd do something a little bit special. We've been digging back through the archives and found a feature you did in 2011 where you gave us the top five tech predictions of the future.
So we thought it'd be quite fun to, you know, have a look back at that and see what you got right and see what you got wrong and see maybe what hasn't happened, what's on the way. So basically, this is the Gadget Show Future Predictions at the 15-year later update.
Back to the future.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm digging back in my memory banks. I've actually seen the clip, it's all right. 15 years ago, I tried to predict what the future of technology might look like. And one of the big shouts was that cash was going to disappear completely. Contactless payments were just starting out. Smartphones were getting smarter. Near-field communication was being utilised a lot more, and the prediction was it wouldn't be long before the physical wallet would be made obsolete. Have a listen to this.
At number five, the cashless society. On The Gadget Show, we've seen many examples of wireless payment schemes, such as London's Oyster Card. However, by 2015, we might not be using cash at all.
That's because soon you'll be able to ditch all of this for one of these.
Earlier this year, Orange unveiled their Quick Tap system. It uses a technology called near-field communication that lets your smartphone operate as a virtual credit or debit card. And what about PayPal's latest app, which allows you to pay your friends with just a quick bump of your phone? But it doesn't end there, because we may soon be able to skip the checkout entirely by self-scanning products and paying for them directly using our handsets. And finally, Microsoft foresees a world without barcodes at all, with money transferred with just a snap of a photo.
Orange! Oh my God! I'd forgotten all about Orange!
Yeah, I Orange. Remember before when Orange were Hutchinson Telecom.
Oh my God.
Do you remember that? And the reason why I know that is because I did their first ever photo shoot in the UK.
History here, ladies and gentlemen. Nostalgia.
No, but
baby.
In all seriousness, that was a really good prediction. You absolutely smashed it. And it's very important for people, especially, I don't think we have any younger listeners, but anyway, to the younger listeners, that it's very important to realise that just that 15-year jump is enough for what Otis just said to have been quite revolutionary and quite unusual.
I mean,
at the time.
I think the prediction was 2015 cashless, which didn't quite happen. But you've got to say, really, people barely use cash now. I love a bit of cash. I love it.
No, God, no.
Don't you? Like a bit of
dirty
money in your hands.
Dirty. My son uses it because he deals in silver.
What?
And he's always, you know, buying and selling silver, so he's got a lot. He's always got a lot of cash, and he says to me, "Oh, Dad, I've got." Oh no, honestly, he does. Wow. He's well into it, and he says, "Oh, I've got. You know, I'll give you £100. Would you give me? You know, would you put some money in my bank account?" Because he wants to get it. He wants to watch it.
He's watching it. He's watching it through his dad. That's brilliant.
He wants to watch it.
He's like,
oh,
this.
Listen,
Dad.
I know this.
Come
is...
here a sec, will you?
No, here.
Let's get down
no, but seriously,
to the Bradbury laundry.
I told him about tax. I told him about tax the other day. He was like, what? I was like, of course. How do you think the potholes get fixed?
Well, they don't, do they? That's not happening either.
All right. So listen, I honestly can't remember the last time I paid for anything with cash. It's tap and go with everything. I don't even use my cards anymore. It's all that phone.
Do you know what the only thing is? Sometimes I feel a bit bad because when you go in a restaurant, I've never got the cash to leave a tip. And I don't like leaving a tip on my phone because they don't get it. I know I've gone off again on a bit of a tangent, but I think it's unfair for people in restaurants. Anyway, moving on.
He's off again, look. Right, next one, please.
Okay, so the next one, the universal translator. We went full science fiction.
The babble fish.
We went full science fiction. Well done, Jason. And predicted the end of all language barriers. Translation apps were starting to appear, and we thought it wouldn't be long before you could talk to anyone in the world. Indeed, everyone in the world without learning their language. Here's what we said.
At number four, the universal translator. Services like Babelfish and more recently Word Lens have gone a long way to break down language barriers, but we still have the problem of, well, talking to one another.
What we really want is that staple of science fiction, the universal translator.
And it's not as far away as you might think. Google's recently updated Translate application for Android offers back-and-forth voice-to-voice translation between 14 different languages. And new app Vocray promises to go one further by adding basic phone call support to their translation app.
Experts predict that by 2020, the need to learn a foreign language may no longer exist, as 7 billion people sont rapprochés comme la traduction universelle devient la norme dans le téléphone mobile. Formidable.
Très bien, très bien, Otis.
Merci beaucoup.
Hasn't quite happened, this one, has it? But it kind of is close, though. Now, you know, we're talking about AirPods earlier and the translation.
What an interesting thing. Well, he was talking about you, you know. And so on the one hand, you absolutely nailed it. And then on the other hand, the you know, was it Culture Eats strategy for breakfast or something like that? So the strategy on in Apple HQ was, I know what we can do. We can add a new feature to some of our devices that translates universally. But culturally, when someone like Susie is going around the world encountering multiple languages in just one day, you know, in the pit lane, and she's not using her device to do that, as we were touching on earlier, it means that the culture hasn't caught up with the tech. Mm. Do you think?
Yeah, that is a good point, actually.
It is a good point. I mean, I think probably, I don't know, but I'm just going to guess that universally people use Google Translate because, you can just put stick it in front of somebody and then you can... I've done that in far-flung places and then, you know, it's easy. But because you haven't always
I just think franglaise. Franglaise, mate. Franglaise. You can go anywhere. And I don't even mean France. I mean anywhere. Because the thing is, you don't have to worry about embarrassing yourself, because just by virtue of being English and being in their country, it's already embarrassing. And so that's done. So now I just go, what I do is I say my English in a French accent.
And loudly.
I say, the car, the taxi, where is the taxi? And it works every fucking time.
Lies.
Okay, well, I think, you know, you pretty much nailed this, the first two, hasn't it? Yeah. Not quite 100%. There yet, maybe. Not quite perfect, but it's certainly getting there.
It's maybe us
that's not jumping on board with it, perhaps. Yeah.
That's what I meant by the culture point. I think we've got to just lean into it.
Yeah, maybe the young'uns have already taken it by the horns and are using it.
Or, I'm going to say this, maybe your next prediction is what's required.
So by next prediction, Jason means number three. We predicted the future of tech wouldn't be in your hands, that it would be in front of your eyes and sometimes, you know, sewn into your clothes. You'd be wearing it. Augmented reality glasses, digital information layered over the real world, the internet becoming part of your surroundings. We were very excited about this one.
At number three, augmented reality glasses. At The Gadget Show, we love augmented reality, but we've always felt that viewing the world through the screen of a mobile is, well, a bit unnatural.
But what if the screen wasn't in your hand, but directly in front of you through a pair of glasses? Imagine the possibilities of a world where the internet wasn't just a service, it was an entirely new dimension.
Zeal Optics recently brought this dream a little closer to reality by announcing their Z3 winter sports goggles with integrated LCD dashboard. Meanwhile, video eyewear company Vuzix has already begun producing fully immersive AR glasses. And while it may be at least 15 years before the dream is fully realized, many people have created visual models of how our future would look, including Keiichi Matsuda, who has designed everything from augmented reality cooking recipes to social networking. And filmmaker Freddie Wong, who has produced fully immersive gaming environments.
Okay, so I'm just going to jump straight in, right? So the reason I pitched this one up for you is because clearly there is an issue with translation, which is actually receiving the information. Do you know what I mean? Like you can, your AirPods can listen, or your AI wearable can listen and it can translate, but giving you that information so that you can then react is a little more complicated until it's on your face, and then it's very, very, I think, more pliable in that sense. But I just wanted to start with something that I thought bolsters your prediction, which I think is very prescient, actually, was very, very on the ball, with something that I think Susie will relate to as well, which is an app that I recently tried on the Apple Vision Pro, very expensive, mixed reality headset called Laps. And it's a companion to live broadcasts of Formula One. I don't know if you guys have seen this thing, but it's absolutely extraordinary. So you can have your television on in your front room, your mixed reality, you've dialed the crown so that you can see into your actual room. And then you can put an overhead kind of game-like view of the real-time action on the track as a track with all the cars on it and their data feeds coming through on your coffee table or on the floor in front of you. And you can grab with your hands and put various driver details and real-time data coming from the real cars that Susie knows better than anyone are transmitting all of that data. And it's a very meaningful, very immersive augmented reality way of experiencing Formula One. So an absolute, you know, completely bang on in terms of your prediction. But I thought you'd find that interesting, yeah. Guys.
That is okay. So fascinating how far that's come. Laps. When you think about that kind of, when you go old-fashioned ship to shore and the just the amount of data that's generated in a Formula One simulation is absolutely phenomenal. And now you're saying that you can get that in your front room. That's just mind-blowing.
You know, it's a really good argument for finally getting computers on our faces. But, you know I'm a big fan of this, so I guess yeah. I would say that. And a great prediction, Oates. Another great prediction. Yes, we're not there. And I think I have to take the cop for this somewhat, that I absolutely thought we would be. I thought that by 2026, these glasses here would have some form of rudimentary display and that they would be no heavier or less practical than my actual spectacles.
Do you think again it's a case where the culture isn't ready for it, but
I think there's an element of that, and legislation as well is coming in, isn't it? And privacy and everything comes into it. Okay, next one.
All right, number two. We went bigger. We predicted holographic television. So not just 3D, but images floating in midair in your living room. with depth as well as, you know, height and length, fully formed imagery. This, I believe, though, was peak gadget show optimism.
At number two, the holographic TV. Whilst Jason is getting excited about the prospect of glasses-free 3D, I'm excited about the next big thing, holograms.
Unlike conventional 3D, where all viewers observe the same image no matter where they're seated, holographic 3D video uses lasers to create images that appear to float in midair and provide a completely different perspective relative to your position.
And virtual princess Leias aren't as far off as you might imagine. Researchers at both MIT Media Lab and the University of Arizona are working on making holographic telepresence a reality, and it could be with us within the next 20 years.
Are we there? Are we there with holographics, no. Guys?
You know, no, the best. The best mainstream that I've seen is the ABBA concert in London.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's not holographics, is it? It's actually screens. So it just it's so vivid, it feels like holographic, but it's not. It's not even 3D.
People got really excited with the sort of resurrection type performances of Tupac and Prince, and you know, we really thought that we were at the beginning of something there, or I'd say even not even the beginning. We thought we were really in the midst of something happening there. But it again, it doesn't seem to have caught
on. The other technology that has caught on to a certain extent in that the company that we went to, which was effectively one guy called Stuart, called Holotronica, that now provide a silver gauze screen technology, and a couple of projectors can do a holographic effect on that. He's now gone from strength to strength and is doing major artists, like the biggest artists in the world. And when you're at a concert and you see that technology, it is all but a hologram. I mean, you believe you're looking at a hologram. It's just that it's a silver gauze that you can't even you don't know is there. Does that make sense? So in perception, certainly at large concert venues that deploy something like Holotronica and the Pepper's Ghost effect that you refer to with Tupac, the holographics are there. But I guess there is a kind of economy of scale, isn't there? So these are expensive technologies, whereas I guess what you were predicting was that we'd have it in our front room, which
is what's not happened. We've ended up with
come to pass.
No, 8K and VR and AR and OLED and stuff like that. It's good for commercial massive events, but the expense of it, I think, is the blocker here probably. And then once again, the uptake from us, you know, wanting it.
So we know what the answer is. Help me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope. Nah.
Okay, next up.
Number one. At number one, the biggest prediction we made, basically, AI, artificial intelligence.
Yeah, what did you say?
So even back then, we were talking about smart robots, self-driving cars, particular services or cloud-based services on computers, etc. You know, we were talking about computers that could eventually think like humans. What we didn't realise, though, was how fast this one would move.
At number one, the artificial brain. Artificial intelligence is everywhere. It powers your search engine, filters out your spam, and powers RoboJace.
Yes, please.
But mankind has always dreamt bigger, and this year alone has seen some huge leaps in AI.
From Audi demonstrating a fully autonomous, intelligent car capable of independent rally racing, to Honda's famous Azimo robot getting a new lease of independent thought and movement. And, most impressively, a supercomputer developed by IBM called Watson, who famously appeared on US TV game show Jeopardy and defeated two former champions in a general knowledge competition.
Worst actress of the decade.
What is Paris Hilton?
Tweens can spend hours on this.
What is Twitter?
Its name sounds like a sharp cry.
What is Yelp?
Scientists believe that by studying the way the human mind learns and stores information, they will ultimately develop computers capable of seeing and understanding the world around us through machine learning.
And by the year 2050, artificial intelligence may have reached a point known as the singularity, which is where we could see machines with intelligence greater than that of humans.
After that, all bets are off.
I'm going to say that you missed the target there. I'm just going to steam in there. I'm giving you a lot of love about your predictions so far. But 2050 for the singularity, I think, is a little long in the tooth. I think we're, you know, so the singularity for me is parity. It depends whether you're going for a Ray Kurzweil definition, you know, from the singularity is near, which is not just parity with the human brain, but it's then an explosion, an exponential explosion to a point where it's, you know, millions of times more powerful than a single human brain. And it feels to me, with the likes of Claude Code and Clawbot and so many other innovations in just the last 12 months, that we're getting close, not necessarily to the singularity as such, but we're getting close to that point where that could start to happen, meaning that AIs can now program themselves. And you know what I mean? And then you've got to say, well, what's the barrier to their explosive growth? The question then becomes, how many physical resources can they actually get their robotic mitts on to start improving their hardware? And that's when it starts to get super, super explosive. So I think you're on the right track, but I think the amazing thing is it's probably going to happen earlier than 2050. That's the long-winded point I'm trying to make.
I agree. And, you know, we're also told that what we are privy to in a sort of a public sense is still somewhat behind where AI actually is at the cutting edge. So,
you know what? Looking back at those predictions, they were pretty impressive, weren't they, on the money?
I think so, Otis. Yeah, I mean, not everything landed precisely where I guess we thought it would, but most of it is surprisingly well.
Yeah, but like cashless payments, AI, augmented reality, live translation, stuff like that, they weren't a million miles off, were they?
Which either means that Otis is very clever, which I know he is because I've seen him on Celebrity Mastermind. Spider-Man, was it?
It was, yes. Peter Parker, a.k.a. Yeah.
Or technology just moves faster than we think. One of the two.
Yes, or maybe I was not born of this time.
Okay, well, if that was the last 15 years, imagine what the next 15 years are going to look like.
Yeah, that takes us to 2041, which suddenly, it doesn't feel that far away, but I still want it to be 1985.
So by 2041, we're expecting holograms, flying cars, and robots doing the podcast.
All right, we'll see you here in 15 years' time, and we'll check that. That is it for this week. Another episode of the Gadget Show podcast wrapped up, safely saved to the cloud. And Otis, great to have you back, mate. Really enjoyed having you with us this week.
Do you know what, guys? I can't lie. It's always a pleasure, especially when I get a chance to find out if any of my old predictions will come back to haunt me.
Yeah, before we go, we need to say a big thank you, though, to the people helping keep this podcast fully charged, our fantastic Patreon supporters. Huge thanks and maximum appreciation go to Havoc, Dan Tainton, Adam Carter, Tom Sanders, Chris Dalrymple, Rick Ellison, BZ Smith, Yusuf Ali, Ian Wilson, Sam Supersonic, Justin Strong, Waka Man, Barry Music Tech Info, Brian Mark Wild, Barclay Thompson, Steve Brandom, Zamir, Andrew Brandt. Legends. Every single one of you.
I think people are starting to make up their own names now. But anyway, a big thank you as well to Kev Barnes, Jared, Mark Fluky D, Paul Sherrock, Colin Taylor, Alan Williams, Chris Hughes, Martin Budnarovsky, Peter Pinner, Dave Green, Ren Mandagorn, Dean Day, Chris Cool and Stephen Green.
And rounding things off, massive appreciation to Colin Jones, Gordon Packer, Richard Martin, Simon Ryland, Philip Eddington, Danny Rushton, Tall Man with Glasses, Skewy Cat, Dave McHugh, Matthew Riley, Darren McCracken, Andrew Bamford, and Duncan Bell. Honestly, incredible support. We appreciate it, don't we, guys?
Yeah, we do. And if you'd like to join this group of fine gadget supporters, you'll get bonus episodes, behind the scenes bits, an ad-free version of the show. And of course, you'll be entered into the draw for our rather lovely £5,000 CEX prize fund.
Just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow, sign up and join the club.
Bye.
See ya.
See ya. Bye-bye.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.